Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to our sixth installment of this this year on Your Jobs in Halacha. And Adam was maskim to be interviewed, and he had a number of questions that were relevant to his particular expertise of nursing practitioners in a more of a clinical setting. Thank you, Adam Mervis. Thank you, Adam and Mrs. Mervis for sponsoring, and thank you to Baruch Dolman and Mrs. Dolman for sponsoring as well. And thank you everybody for coming. Okay, so as usual, what we'll do is that Adam will go through a bunch of the questions that he asked, and I always have in mind that I'll be able to cover a couple of the questions, and then I start getting into it, and we can't even get to half of one question. That's what ultimately ends up happening, because each one of these are really fascinating topics, and they're very far-reaching. Over the years, the truth is, we have a number of nurses in our kahila, women as well, and they've reached out with different questions over time, and each nurse, depending in which area she specializes in or where she works, ends up with a different group of questions. Like there's one of the people in our kahila who works in geriatric care and ends up with more questions regarding geiseis and misa and these things, and then there's an emergency room has its own bunch of questions. So these questions are more universal, and they're also applicable to doctors as well. So go ahead, take it away.
Sure. Thank you, Frank, for organizing this series and as well preparing. I didn't do much, so thanks for sharing. Thank you. So first question is, I'm often asked general medical questions from people in the community, and I'm wondering how far do I have to extend myself? So since there's generally like a major liability question, if I don't know much about their past medical history, and it comes up a lot, and ultimately I have to protect my license, so many times that I'm asked to give an antibiotic, or it comes up when someone's traveling in the area and they want me to refill prescriptions, or there's giving me a set of symptoms, and if I don't have them in the clinical setting, it's hard for me to really know. So, but I guess there's the idea that I conflicted with when it comes to chesed in the community, and but how far, I guess, do I have to take that?
It's a great question, as it happens. This is the one we're going to be focusing on more. I think this is a pet peeve by nurses and doctors, being asked for treatment outside of the clinical setting. I remember from like 100 years ago reading this comic where someone goes over to a doctor by a party and says, "Oh, doctor, you know, my back has been killing me. What do you suggest?" So the doctor says, "Okay, get undressed." What's interesting about this question in particular is that there is something called Good Samaritan laws, which you may or may not be familiar with. Good Samaritan laws are there to protect doctors or nurses or anybody really who sees someone that's in an emergency situation and wants to help them but is fearful of helping them because of liability. So you see someone as Lailenu in a car accident and you want to go over and you know, let's say CPR, and you want to start administering care, but you're not licensed or anything, so you're going to start helping them, and then they're going to sue you that you killed them. So you don't want to do it. So there's Good Samaritan laws that protect you. There's laws that say that if you are a Good Samaritan, which is a Christian term, but it means that you are a Venediva slave with the goodness of your heart, you go out of your way to volunteer to help, you can't be sued, and you're protected. However, those protections actually, even though they extend to doctors and nurses, they're somewhat limited. A nurse is actually a little worse off. And I just saw this today. The case was that two women were walking. One was a nurse, and they passed by a playground, and then they saw a girl fall off the monkey bars like 10 feet and fall on her back. She was injured, a six-year-old girl. So the mother called the ambulance, and ambulance was on their way. So the woman who was a nurse ran over and told the girl to stand up and see if she could bend over to see if her back was injured. And then the EMT came, and then they had her lie down. They strapped her to a board, and they moved her in. And there was nothing had happened to the girl. But if she had actually sustained a back injury, then this, what the nurse told her to do, was actually the worst thing for her to do, to bend over, because that could aggravate the injury more. So the person was asking, would she have been liable? And the answer was yes, because being that she is a nurse, and she actually, this particular nurse, worked in trauma, so she would have been expected to know that that's the wrong thing to do, and therefore she would be liable. So being that a person is a doctor or a nurse, they actually are putting themselves at a greater risk because they can be held liable if they're expected to know better. And then they most certainly won't be covered by the insurance if they do that outside of their clinic, right? And they're going to lose their job and license and all kinds of things.
Not practice within your organization.
Yeah. Right.
In Dafyomi had recently that when a person is not a professional, they're more liable because they shouldn't have touched the case.
Correct. That's halacha. Right, so this is no. I mean, that's very good because we're going to get to that. So we're going to look at it how the secular, this is how secular law looks at it, and then we're also going to deal with how halacha looks with it because they're both relevant when a person is, you know, if your question is, are you obligated, are you b'chayiv to take these kind of risks, and are you b'chlal b'chayiv to treat someone pro bono, right, when they're just asking you for advice, all those things have to be taken into account. How much are you b'chayiv to make yourself liable? And risk hurting someone and having them sue you, plus how much is b'chal your obligation to treat someone. So it's a great question. We're going to spend a lot of time on that question. Go ahead.
I guess the second question is somewhat...
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to point out one other thing. One fascinating thing I did see is that on an airline, on an airplane, there is a specific set of laws, of Good Samaritan laws, like you always see, you know, someone collapses an airplane, hey, is there a doctor on board? The airline themselves take achrayus, because it can't be a law, because the airline could be over any country, right, who has different laws. So the airlines themselves are obligated to take full achrayus that the doctor, no matter what happens, can't, or even if he gets sued, they have to cover for it. So if you're on an airplane, you're cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
They cover nurses as well?
Well, huh?
Yeah.
Anybody that volunteers is...
No.
Go ahead.
Okay. So if I encounter someone in an emergency, but they're not under my care, am I required to help them?
So the same kind of question.
Same kind of question, but I guess more specifically this happened when I was at my first primary care office, and there was a patient next door at a PT, physical therapy location, and they called one of us over, the patient had chest pain. So it was a rookie mistake, but I should have just said to them, you know, take care of the patient. But in the end, the doctor of the practice, kind of we all agreed that they should come into the practice, so I should assess them. And then I couldn't, and I really felt like she was critical. And in the end, she did eventually go to the ER, and she had pericarditis, and it was like a whole issue. But I had to deal with her for about 2 hours, and she refused to go to the ER. So I put myself in a situation where technically they weren't under my care, but I was wondering, like, when it's right in front of me, and they're not some, you know, how do I deal with that? It's very
funny. Well, what did the doctor say you should do? What did the boss want you to do?
So they said we should see the patient and evaluate them, and I thought that the physical therapy office should take care of him because...
Yeah.
The EMS will come and
just take him away.
Right.
So
there was a lot of resistance to trust medical care for that patient, and it was a mess.
I think there is an ethical obligation,
right.
I believe, right? For a doctor to treat. Also from secular perspective. This I will see halacha in a minute, but there's an ethical obligation. I think, I don't know if a doctor can be held accountable or anything, but if he's in an emergency situation. Okay, go ahead. Number three.
So... when I'm treating female patients and I'm doing a medical exam, are there any issues of touching, yichud? And I asked about, you know, sometimes for certain exams, I'm not always required to have a chaperone, but there are definitely yichud issues. Sometimes patients decline a chaperone. So I don't know if there's any...
There's no law about a chaperone?
So for certain exams there is, you have to have some, but not always.
Sometimes you have the opposites for certain things. I know, like,
sometimes patients will say, I actually don't want
anybody else.
If they just type it and they decline, they don't want somebody.
And then you're left without...
And then there's no, it's just me, yeah.
Right, so these are both two very important questions, right? Yichud, I think in professions that have the worst chalice of yichud, top of the list is therapists. They have the absolute worst chalice of yichud because if it's a man and a woman, whichever one is the therapist or they will be stuck in a room with someone that nobody's allowed to come in. You can't have any video camera. You have to ensure privacy. And it's like full-blown yichud is really very problematic. A doctor and a nurse are a little better because technically someone could knock on your door and ask to come in at any point, unless they need you, you know, if it's an emergency. So there is at least a possibility of someone walking in. With a therapist, you don't even have that. So yichud is a big issue. But negiyah was something I did want to talk about more, but I don't think we're going to have time to get to it. Because negiyah has a lot of different applications, right? Obviously, there's negiyah when you're treating a person, so that's one kind of negiyah. It's called negiyah shel bidar chiba. But this is not so much in your clinical experience it comes up, I think. But I think
a later question I had was about where I've dealt with negiyah issues when we have just a nursing get together, and I've been approached by many women to hug them. It's normal to put a pat on the a shoulder or hug one, and handshaking is not a thing in the nursing profession at times. That's just the nature of the.
You think, you know, like COVID got rid of handshakes and replaced it with hugs.
So,
you know?
I've been, and generally speaking, it's like in a room of like our staff, and I really don't. Other than trying to be normal,
that sounds very unlikely that would be mutter to give a hug to a woman. But what's funny is though, but even in practice itself, as I said, this doesn't come up so much in clinical, but in, let's say, in a hospital setting where someone, let's say there's a young patient, someone's a nurse and the patient is young, but they're old enough to have an Isser Negiyah, and they want you to hold their hand while they're going through a treatment, or they want you to give them a hug because they need the comforting, or an old man or an old woman, they're dying, right? They want you to give them more than just Negiyah Shel Bidar Chiba, Negiyah for the sake of treatment. They want you to actually comfort them. Is that permitted? And that, like I said, it probably comes up less in your in treatment
less.
By you, but it does come up in nursing in general, and it's a very interesting question. Like I said, we're not going to get to it so much, but there is one thing where there is a heter is where there is a whole nother kavana in what you're doing. I just saw this today. I was looking at this. I saw this. It blew my mind, actually. Someone asked Chaim Falaji, I believe, if you're allowed, you know, by Sfaradim, but in particular, they would kiss the hand of the Chacham. They want to know if women can kiss the hand of the Chacham. And he allowed it. He allowed it, and he said it's like kissing a Sefer Torah. It's not Chiba. It's a whole different Kavana. And he said, if they want a bracha, you could put your hands on their head and give them a bracha. I tell you, like I said, it blew me away. But and this is from a long time ago, Chaim Falaji in Yerushalayim, 100 years ago. It's not like, you know, it's not modern. I think modern, it would not fly. Like, that would not go today. That would be a very quick route to be excommunicated, you know. But I guess you were big enough, 150 years ago, you could get away with stuff like that. But the concept itself is a very applicable concept, which means that if you have a totally different kavana, like in this case, let's say someone needs comfort, right? They need to be comforted in order to be able to undergo treatment. So that is not, it's not chiba, it's derechiba, which is you're giving them a hug, so to speak. So you don't have the heter of ena derechiba, but it's a whole other kavana. Like he's saying, oh, there's kavanas mitzvah, like kiss the sefer Torah. Here, it's you can make a similar kind of argument. So there's that. And there's also another makom heter, which I found fascinating. Also, this Ramesha talks about in the tshuva. If someone is old, and so old that it's not really possible for them to engage and be in any kind of relations, physical relations, then the isser of negiyah doesn't apply anymore. So there's another makom, and there's even a possibility there's no isser yichud either, which is also relevant. Again, that need would require part two of this year. So continue.
Is that with both
genders? That's the point. Yeah, go ahead.
So when I'm on call on Shabbos, generally speaking, I have my phone on and I could facilitate a patient a couple of different ways. Sometimes it could be where I'm just responding back to them to say to go to the ER. Sometimes I have to get on the computer, send in a prescription. It could be multiple things, depending on what the patient's looking to treat. So I was wondering, are there any recommendations in trying to do minimal amount of halacha, or is technically everything considered urgent? So in the past, at my last practice, I was able to get off with just talking to the patient, recommending, and kind of documenting after Shabbos. But this office I'm in now, they treat everything, they want to do everything. So I don't have that liberty to just be like, document later or get on my computer later.
You can't say two aspirins and call me in the morning.
Right, yeah.
So you have that is not going to fly.
Yeah, so I guess that's what I was wondering about regarding Shabbos.
Right. So this is also a great question. Also a big topic about Bechlal. What is the heter for doctors to operate on, to work on Shabbos when they're not working, A, for Jews, and B, for Pikuach Nefesh, right? So it's not even necessarily Pikuach Nefesh that you're answering. You're doing
right.
What you're required to do on call. And the heter in general, if it is in a general way, the heter is called Eva, which is that if you don't do this and if you don't treat non-Jews and Jews equally, there will be create Eva, will create hatred in the world, and that itself is the biggest cause of Pikuach Nefesh, certainly as we're seeing these days. It has a big potential for Pikuach Nefesh. So that's the heter. And the question is, once that's the heter, so then how do we judge that kind of heter? In terms of Pikuach Nefesh, a typical Pikuach Nefesh, when Lo'alayinu, someone, a Jew, is in an emergency situation, so their halacha is that if it's an actual emergency situation, you don't cut any corners. You don't try to do it with a shino. You don't try to do it with a non-Jew. You just treat it yourself and you do everything you need to do. That's the halacha in an emergency situation. If it's a non-emergency situation, which may come to an emergency situation, so you have to, let's say, you know, you go to the hospital because something, let's say, for example, someone breaks a bone, right? So broken bone needs to be treated. You can't leave it for 24 hours without treating it. But it's not urgent. It doesn't have to happen in 5 minutes, right? You can do it. It has to be done in the next 6 hours. So in that situation, you are supposed to find a non-Jew to drive you and find other ways to work around it because it's not minute-to-minute urgency. So the question is, how do we look at this? Because this technically is kind of, there's no immediate urgency. It's for the person it might be immediate urgency, but it's not. The real heter here is a long-term urgency. It's a long-term pikuach nefesh. So it's also a great question.
What
and how
sort of like a reverse, I guess, like a reverse eva, where it's like it's important to make sure that in the future you will be able to treat all cases, including cases where it is pikuach nefesh. So because of that, it's necessary to also treat the cases that are not pikuach nefesh.
Right. Yeah, so all that can be calculated into this question. So that's also, it's a very general question, and it also needs its own dedicated
check. Yeah, I think also that this is an emergency line, so I know they're calling me for emergent issues.
Right, sometimes probably after 2 minutes you realize it's...
Maybe it's not,
right?
Maybe it's not. Exactly.
And then you're there and you're still stuck, right? Yeah. Okay, so do number five, go on.
Okay. So this is a reality in the world, but when I meet patients that want to discuss transgender options, or, you know, I have to facilitate them, they're seeing me for treatment or to get them through that process, whether it's like a referral to a specialist, I've done less of this, I don't like to do it, but treating with testosterone injections is really complicated. For transgender patients, so I'm gone away from that and try to have the endocrinologist manage that. But generally speaking, recently I was at my last practice and this practice, I always feel like I have to find a transgender endocrinologist specialist. So recently I had this situation, and I just don't know if there's an issue if I'm facilitating. When I spoke to Rob in the past, when I was a nurse helping out with certain surgeries that I was not doing the surgery, but they were had a sperm involved with them. I was a nurse at the time. Now it could be a little different because I'm actually facilitating and the one getting them to that journey.
So this is essentially a Lifnei Iver question. That's a bad word. So let's talk about this for a minute. I remember when I was in the Beis Hara, my earlier days in the Beis Hara in Lakewood, so I'm talking 15 years ago at least, I remember, maybe more, about 15, 16 years ago. So transgender wasn't such a thing then, at least it wasn't on the, you know, the forefront of all news and everything. So I remember that it wasn't me answering the phone call. There was a different Rav who was more of a senior Rav, Baruch Hashem, and he was answering the Shaila line in the Beis Hara. And he got to Shaila, and I mean, I didn't witness it, but I was told that he basically hit the floor. So he was called up, and he said that it's just someone that had undergone a transgender operation and was originally a man, still a man, but had for the most otherwise outwardly looked like a woman. And then he was not religious at the time, but then he became religious. And then his father, I think, passed away, and he wanted a daven for Amida Sekash. And he wanted to know if he could. And he got the Beis HaRav's number. These are the kind of questions the Beis HaRav got. So the Rav was out on the floor. It was not Negev. So they had to move on to the next Rav. It turned out, at that time already, 15, 16 years ago, there were already 3 Svarim on the topic. Yes, 3 Svarim on the topic. One of them had, yes, 3. With Yitzhar Chachma, you could find them easily. They had cool names. I forgot what they were called, like really catchy names. But anyway, there was Svarim that actually dealt with this discussion. The question is, just because someone wants to do that, there isn't necessarily an Aveira that you're over by doing that. Maybe Hashkafically very perverse, but... halachically speaking, and the only aver you could possibly be aver is sirus, which is if you cause yourself to become infertile as a result.
That's what I asked you about way back.
Right.
With the,
right, right. So that probably often happens, I imagine, but it may be reversible, right?
It's depends what very, very right. Like unlikely, but uh-huh. It could happen. It could be reversible, but I haven't had a pre-op patient like that yet. So right. I haven't been presenting like that.
So then that would really be a real if neighbor question. In other words, if you are enabling a person to do that, to be mesareis themselves. So again, there's a little bit more of a sugi here because there's a difference between a man and a woman. A man has an isser of sirus, a woman does not, or at least perhaps not. Again, it's a little more complex, needs also its own discussion. So that's one distinction. And in a man also depends where the person's holding in life, you know, if they are fertile at all at that point, regardless, you know, so if they're older.
What about Jew
versus non-Jew is a shaila as well. So essentially, the Isra of Sirus, the Torah says, is even to animals. So if you're the one who's doing the Sirus, and say if you're giving injections, right, which are causing the Sirus, that would be a problem.
So it's the doctor.
What?
So the doctor.
Or the nurse that's giving the injections in this case, right?
Okay, but in terms of referring to the doctor,
right?
Right.
Or them having it done. Yeah. So in any case, it's a general. It's a lifnei iver plus a bunch of related questions about exactly what the isser is, or if there is an isser involved. So yeah, also a fascinating question. Now lifnei iver actually comes up. You didn't ask this question, but lifnei iver comes up a lot, not outside of clinical, much more in hospital nursing, right? Obviously, when you have a Jewish patient and they want tray for food, or they want chametz on Pesach, and especially if the patient who is not just bringing them the food, but you actually need to feed them the food because they can't eat it on their own, then you really have a serious issue of lifnei iver because they totally can't do it on their own. And it would only... the only way there would be any kind of heter would be if there's at least some other nurse who can cover for you, and you worked in a hospital setting.
Yeah,
I don't remember how that works. So sometimes that is an option, and sometimes that's not, right?
Yes.
Well?
Yeah, sometimes. But I couldn't think of the examples.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been asked that. Yeah. I've been asked that. It comes up. I was actually just asked that someone who was a chaplain. He was visiting a Jewish patient on Pesach, and the guy asked him to pass him some chametz. And he's a chaplain, right? So so he said, you know, he says, as a rule, as a chaplain, I don't do anything without the nurse. So he called the nurse and let the nurse deal with it. All right, go ahead.
Okay. I think the next one is kind of related to a couple of the first ones. Regarding the...
Right, you can skip to number... skip to 7, right?
Yeah. So... this happened a lot in my last practice, not so much right now, but how do I deal with the issue when the office has certain procedures, whether it's cardiac studies, other like health promotion studies, that I know that they're trying to bring revenue for the practice, but I don't think it's really going to give the patient any data about their health that's really going to help them. In my last practice, I was pushed incredibly to get patients to do stuff, and part of why I left my practice, but basically it was so stressful Now I'm kind of under a bigger umbrella, so I don't feel like I have to do things for the you know, organization that don't really help the patient. So I don't know if that's... So I was wondering about Gnevis Das.
Or Gnevis.
Or Gnevis in general, right?
Also Lefneva, a different kind of Lefneva, giving a bad etzah to someone, right? Giving them bad advice to try out a procedure, which is that. That's right, great question. Right? Shlomo had a similar kind of question in our last iteration, also about suggesting something to someone, which is, that was more a halachic question, whether it's not a bad good idea halachically. But here, this is your classic, you know, bringing a car to a mechanic and he finds 17,000 things wrong with your car, right, that he tells you to do, and you really don't need to do them, and right, that's what basically you're saying. So that's also a great question, definitely a great question, honesty. All right, yeah. So let's move on. Let's try now to figure out at least the first question over here. What exactly is a doctor's obligation to heal? What is a doctor's obligation to do it pro bono or to do it to get paid? And we're going to deal with a couple of different aspects of this. We're going to deal with, number one, no one would ever dream, right? Let's say you have a problem in your house with some electricity or something. So would you dream of going over to an electrician and saying, oh, I have this problem, can you come by and fix it? And think that you're not going to pay, right? No one would ever do that. That would be a given, of course. You tell the guy to come, and then you pay him. They call over a plumber. Well,
people do that with IT people.
They do. That's true. Maybe a little like doctors, I guess. Computer doctors, yeah. So yes, for some reason in the doctor, physician profession, that seems to be like no problem. You ask them to do their job, and then you expect them to do it for free. Is that wrong? Essentially wrong, and if it's essentially wrong, so then by definition you don't need to do it, right? Same way, if an electrician knows that if he comes over and fixes your problem and you're not going to pay him, then he doesn't have to go, right? It's not a chesed. We're not in this for our health, no pun intended. So that's a question. That's one question. Is there a chiv on a doctor from that angle, or is it chesed? How do we look at it? And then there's the very, very, very big question with liability that we're going to touch on: is what kind of liability does the doctor have halachically if he treats and makes a mistake and something happens? And does halacha care that he's liable? Meaning, does halacha say, well, since there's a chance of liability, therefore you don't have to do it? Or does halacha say, no, even though there's liability, you have to do it anyway? And strangely, it's actually discussed very clearly, very, very openly, in very early sources. So, there. And then lastly, we're going to get to insurance and how that plays a role and how the law plays a role also if we have time. So let's take a look at the first source here. So the first source is a Rambam. It's in Pirush Mishnayos. It's really a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in the Darim. How long ago did Daf Yomi learn the Darim? It feels like very recently.
It was last year.
It was a year ago already? A whole year?
No, less than a year. It was like Pesach time.
Right, 6 months. It didn't feel like it was so long ago. No. I mean, I think with Daf Yomi it always doesn't feel like that long ago, but... So anyway, there's a Mishnah in the Dharm. So the Mishnah says, "Hamudr hana mechaveri v'nichus lebakrei." So if someone's mudr hana from his friend, so he can't have any hana from him, right? Or he can't give him any hana, and he comes to be mevakrei chayla oimid, so he can stand to be mevakrei chayla. And the rationale here is because it's a mitzvah. You're allowed to do things that are a mitzvah because mitzvahs lavel hanas nenu. So you could be mevakrei chayla, but you can't sit there because then you're benefiting from his chair. So that you have no hetter to do oimid avlo yeshu umurapeyu, and you can heal him if you're a doctor, refuas nefesh, something to heal him. But you can't heal his money, and that means that, let's say, if his animal is sick, you can't treat his animal, but you could treat him. So why could you treat him? Why are you allowed to give him that benefit? So the Rambam says, there's no iser to treat the chayla himself, because it's a mitzvah. Writes a Leimar, Chiv HaRoifa Min HaTayra L'Rapos Chol Yisrael. A Roifa has an obligation, Min HaTayra, to heal sick Jews. Zeh Nichla B'Pirish Mash Amra Pasik. And this is included in what the Pasik says, V'Hashay Voisei Loi. That's a Pasik V'Hashavas Aveda. Right, so you have to return it to him. But we learn from Hashavas Aveda also, the Gemara says Hashavas Nefesh, that you have to save a person. It's part of the Chiv of Hashavas Aveda. L'Rapos is Gufan, to heal them. Keshehu... We see him that he's in danger, and you can save him. In his body, if you have with your body, in other words, you have a way to help him either yourself with your own skills, or you can pay money, or with your wisdom, you have an obligation to do so. So the Rambam says the mitzvah, right? Ram says so much so that it's a mitzvah, that there's no problem for you to administer treatment to someone that you have made a neder, that you're not going to benefit them at all, because it's a mitzvah, mitzvah lav hanistin. Okay, that's the Rambam. Now, the Rambam says, chiv ha-reif min ha-tel ha-rapa. So we all know, actually last week's parasha, parasha mishpatim, the Gemara says, v'rapa y'rapa y'rapa, the person will go to a doctor and get healed. Zakta Gemara, Mikanch Nitin Rashus Larape Larape. Right? From here we learn that as we give permission was given to a doctor to heal. It doesn't sound like it's an obligation. It sounds like, if anything, the Gemara is saying the exact opposite, that it's permission, but it's not an obligation. So there's a Ramban, Al Atayra, in Parshas Bichu Kaisai, that discusses this. The Ramban says like this: what does it mean, Mikanch Nitin Rashus Larape Larape? He says a very interesting thing. It's a long Ramban, so I skipped a lot of it, but I think you'll get the idea here. V'aklal. Kibi Yos Yisrael Shleimim Behem Rabim. If Klal Yisrael were the way they are meant to be, and that many of them, below Yisnagin Yonah B'tevel Klal, then Hashem doesn't guide them with Derech HaTeva, with the natural way of the world. V'yasser Machlam Mekilbaram, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will remove all sickness from them. Atchelo Yitzarechu L'Refe, they won't need doctors. V'leshtamrim B'derech M'darkei Refuas Klal, they won't have to be careful with anything medical related. And that's what tzaddikim would do in the time of a navi. Gam ki ikr and avin shiachlu, even if they did an aver and they got sick, lo yedushu b'raifim, they wouldn't go to a doctor. Rak b'neviim, they would go to neviim. Now, personally, if I lived in that day and age, I think a navi was a lot more effective than the doctors then. So I think that was good medical advice to go to a navi rather than go to a doctor. But okay, but al kaponim, at the time when they thought that the doctors could do something, they went to a navi. Fine. B'hum amarim, and that's a Gemara brachas. She'ein darkum shel bnei adam berfuais. The Gemara says this language, that it's not really the derech of people to get healed, al shenagu, but they've chosen to do that. So the Ramban explains it like this: she'ilu lohei darkum berfuais. If humankind or tzaddikim or anybody, any group of people or any individual would choose that, you know what, I am not doing this whole medical thing. Then you would only get sick as HaKadosh Baruch Hu determined, if you did an Aveira, and then you do tshuva and you would get healed. But that's not the way the world generally works. But we have chosen to go with Teva, Derech HaTeva, and we've chosen to work with the medical profession. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with us differently, and there's a certain kind of mikra that can happen, that a person can get sick and he can get healed, which would work outside of just direct chait versus tshuva. So, in other words, when if a person is above refuas, if he has a level of betachon where he totally relies on Hashem, doesn't go to doctors, then there's going to be a very direct correlation. He does an avera, he gets sick, he does tshuva, and he gets well. It'll be direct. And he won't have a need to go to a doctor. It'll work that way. But if a person is not holding on that level of being such a Baal B'tachan and saying, no doctors for me, so then it'll work the way everything else in the way in the world works, with a whole bunch of level of kisuyim, meaning to say, yeah, ultimately it's from Hashem and it's because of an avera or whatever is causing a person to get sick, but it comes with a whole bunch of levels of kisuyim, which require ishtadlus and require you to go to a doctor, and it has a whole derech hateva approach to it. Now he explains the Lashna Gemara. V'zui kavanasam ba'amram. And this is what the Gemara means. V'rapa yirape, mikan shenitna reshus l'roipi l'rapa. So from here we see that there is reshus for a doctor to heal. So lo amru, the Gemara doesn't say shenitna reshus l'chayla l'esrapas. We don't say that there's permission for a person who's sick to go get himself healed. It means like this: kivin shachala hachayla, being that the person got sick, ubalus rapis, and now he wants to go to a doctor, kinag brufus, because that's what people do. They go derech hateva and they go with doctors. V'hu lo haya ma adas Hashem shechelkam b'chayim, and he's not from those tzaddikim shechelkam b'chayim that are so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ein l'roi fe lesser atzmi refuase. So it just means that the doctor shouldn't think that maybe I'm not allowed to treat this person. Number one. First of all, he may not want to treat him because maybe the guy will die. I don't want to be liable, right? I don't want to kill him by mistake. So the doctor has permission to treat him, even though there is a chance that he may make his situation worse. Because you are experienced. And another reason why a doctor may not want to treat is, he'll say, look, Hashem aladuhu al-refik al-basar. Maybe the doctor's a big tzaddik. And he'll say, well, you want me to treat you? Hashem made you sick. Let Hashem treat you. That's another reason. A doctor has permission to just treat, and he doesn't have to be concerned with either of those two things. Shekhar Nargu. But if a person is a big tzaddik, he will never have to go to a doctor. So the Ramban is saying that Rishus L'Reip L'Rampes is specifically coming to address two things, and one of them is our topic. The one thing it's coming to address is that a doctor may not want or may not think it's permissible for him to treat, because there is a possibility that he will make the situation worse. And the Rishus L'Reip L'Rampes means as long as you are bucky and you're doing, I guess, what's normal, you are permitted to do that and take that risk of endangering the patient even more. That's
in the clinic.
Isn't that the first rule?
Right.
Hippocratic. Right. Do no harm. Right. 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 Yeah, okay. Right. So he's saying you can. If it's necessary. But the other thing is that it's an ashkafic thing that maybe you think you wouldn't be allowed to treat someone that Hashem made sick. So he says no, you can. Okay. Now there's a siman in Shulchan Aruch that's called Hilchos Reife. Do you know that? I didn't know it was called that.
No.
It's part of Hilchos Bikur Chayla, but it's actually a separate siman. So three sifim. I guess it should be recommended reading for all doctors. But you may not want to see what it says. So just giving you a warning there. So anyway, this is Senyora Dea, siman, Shimon Lamed Vav, three sifim. But this is Sif Alvin base. So take a look what this says over here. Nitnura, this is Mechaber. Nitnura Tayru Shus L'Reif L'Rabbis. The Torah gave permission for a doctor to heal. O mitzvah he, and it's a mitzvah. And it's part of pikuach nefesh. And if you hold yourself back from treating someone, you're considered that you killed him. And even if there's another person who could heal this guy, which means the EMT is coming, right? He says, Shalaiman, I call Adam Zechelos Shabbos. You have to do what you know how to do, because who says they'll be successful, and you may be the one who will be successful. Right? But don't be busy with healing people, Elam Ken Hubaki, unless you are knowledgeable. And there's no one who's better than you to treat. Because if you do treat someone where there's someone who's more experienced than you, then you're also Shefik Tamim. This is a very interesting line. If you treat someone without getting permission from Beis Din, then you have to pay if you do something wrong. Now, what is this Rishus Beis Din, right? Whoever heard of Beis Din giving permission for doctors, licensing doctors to treat? So we'll see in a minute what that means. But he only says this permission business only regarding liability. Right, so it says if you didn't get permission from Beis Din, then you're liable, and you have to pay if you do something wrong. Even though you're an expert, but if you had Rishus Beis Din v'tah and you made a mistake v'hizik and you caused damage to the person that you're treating, pater medina adam, you don't have to pay medina adam, but chay medina shemaim, you are still obligated medina shemaim to remedy what you've done. And if you actually killed someone, and you know that you made this mistake, you're going to Gauls. Okay. So we have here the first part of this halacha is that every doctor has an obligation, a mitzvah, to be merape, like the Rambam. And he says that if you don't, you're shefech tamim, but you do have to be a bucky, but you can't push it off to someone else unless that other person is more experienced than you. Fine. Then he says that in terms of the liability, whether you're chayiv to pay or not, so it seems like he's saying you're always going to be chayav b'dinei shamayim. You're always going to have to pay b'dinei shamayim if you cause someone damage. But as far as dinei adam, it depends if you got rishus beis din, quote unquote, whatever that means. If you've gotten permission from beis din, that is what your liability will depend on. That's the falaf. Now, so beis says, and this is also very relevant, haroife asr litol schar hachachma v'limud. So the roife, a doctor, cannot demand payment based on his wisdom and limud, his education. So meaning, you have a student loan of, I don't know, right? $200,000 probably, if a person's a doctor. You can't charge more than that, $500,000 if you're a doctor. Good thing I'm not a doctor. So you have
the MP route.
What?
That's not what the MP route.
Yeah. So you can't charge a person based on that. That's not why you can charge a person. What can you charge them? You can only charge schar batala. Okay? Now, for the record, a rabbi also is only allowed to charge schar batala. So either I'm not getting paid enough, or the doctor's not getting paid too much. Okay, anyway. So that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. A doctor can only get paid schar batala, which means, schar batala always means, the fact that he's busy with you is preventing him from doing something else that would make him a lot of money. So that's why he's allowed to charge you, because by serving you, he's being prevented from doing another job. So that's the heter to take money.
Essentially, the chachman libud can't factor in, because that should help you magdir what the batala is.
You think, but here the guy's a doctor, right? So what else? Everything he's gonna do. That's his profession, right?
You could be doing.
You could be a professor, right?
More people. You can.
Yeah, but then you can't charge for anybody. Right, no matter who you, right, you're kind of, it's a catch 22 here. The only other thing you could do that you'd be allowed to take money for is to teach. You could be a professor, but you don't make so much money being a professor. So I don't know exactly how to, well, probably, I imagine, right, that may be a difference. What?
I'm talking about specifically when someone is sick or when but if someone comes for a wellness visit, you could charge them.
You'd be saying it's not pikuach nefesh and it's not any of these things.
So that's
debatable.
I could be doing that stuff instead.
I hear. Okay. I hear that. Yeah.
Does pikuach nefesh mean, let's say, digital efforts? It mean making sure people are healthy?
It doesn't have to be pikuach nefesh mamish, right? But a wellness visit is just, it's just a checkup. It's not I don't think it would fall under that.
What? So like that case where Mark, say that guy.
Yes.
Like that guy couldn't pay. Under halacha, he couldn't repay Mark for.
Right. Well, it was Shabbos, right? So there's no schar v'tala on Shabbos, right? Yeah, definitely. But the truth is, why is this relevant? It's relevant like this. This is we're not going to get to it, but all the way in the end over here, the Tzitz Eliezer writes. So let's say someone comes to you, right, and says, "Can you refill my prescription?" He says, "That doesn't take you any time that you'd be doing anything else. That takes you 2 seconds, right, to write them out, scratch out a piece of paper for them." He says, "You can't demand schar v'tala for that." He says, if someone comes to you, and what's his example? He says, they say they call you up. They call you up and they say, "These are my symptoms. What should I do?" Right? Even let's say you are inclined to. So I like I said, I don't know. There were doctors that would actually tell you, "Can you submit it to the insurance? Like, could you submit the claim, like the treatment?" Oh. It's because they would want. Why not? Like, why not get paid? It doesn't cost you anything. Your insurance is paying it. So they would say, and according to this, he says, if it absolutely doesn't take you any time and it doesn't prevent you from doing anything else that you're doing, not only that, maybe the doctor's on his computer and working as he's answering your phone call, right? And he's getting paid. He's double billing, like a lawyer thing. So it's so then he's literally not losing any. He's literally not losing any money. By answering your questions, he says you're talking a lot of take money for that, and the relevance of that is that what I started saying is that someone's asking you for treatment, so you have a mitzvah, but you say, "Oh, why should I do it for free?" So really, you're mechuyev to do it for free, but you're entitled to tzchar batal, but you're not always entitled to tzchar batal, right? You're only entitled if it actually makes a difference.
But recently, I wasn't thinking about being charged, but I asked a lawyer about, can I just have. A consent form for people in the community, and so I protect myself.
Right, for liability. That you should be allowed for. Right,
that's that should be allowed to do. Anybody could ask questions.
Right,
as long as they sign this form.
Right.
The difference if you say that beforehand, and people know beforehand that if they call you, you're going to charge to write a prescription.
No, I mean you could do that. I'm saying it's Isser v'Heter here.
I want you to like.
Right, I'm saying he says you can't do it. You're not allowed to.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to take money for that. It's not because there is no batala. You have no hetter to take money for that. It's a very unpopular halacha. I'm not. I don't. Maybe there's a reason why nobody knows where the siman Shulchan Aruch is. But regardless, it's that's what it says here. So let's take a look at the shach for a minute. The shach says nitner shus larefu larapis. He says shelo yoimar mali l'tzar hazeh. Why should I get involved? Shema etta. I may make a mistake. When him says, "Hurry, bushogi girl, kill someone by mistake." But you shouldn't hold yourself back because you might make a mistake. Or mitzvah and it's still a mitzvah, right? So it's very clearly saying that you can't not treat someone for the fear of hurting them. Now you're saying liability. It's different.
Yeah, well,
it's very different. Yeah. I understand. For you saying, what about? I don't want to hurt someone, which is like what you kind of were saying. Forgetting liability, I don't want to treat someone out of my office because I don't know the medical history. I don't, right? Which is a valid argument. And the truth is, I guess if it's outside of your bikias, which means you don't think you can do a good job, you probably shouldn't be treating them. But he says, as far as the fact that you're taking a risk, he says that the Torah requires you to take that risk. to treat someone.
Wouldn't that just be other versions of sort of gadlun menu? Meaning, it's not necessarily that you think something's going to happen. It's just it's that there's another setting in which this can happen better.
Right.
So isn't that?
It would. I think it would be similar. I think it would be similar. Now, take a look. So let's turn over. Let's skip a little bit ahead over here because we don't have that much more time. Take a look at this Eis Hay. It's a Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel is early Achron on Shulchan Aruch. And he wants to explain, what does this Rishus Beis Din mean exactly? It said that if you have permission from Beis Din, then you're not liable. You can't be held liable. Halachically, you can't be required to pay. He says, V'nira, mashakasev imhu baki. This that we say that he has to be a baki, that's Rosh Olaymer, im yesh l'ksav. You have a diploma, basically, or a license. Me'ayis ha'makim sh'naisin sham Rishus l'rapois. The place where they give you permission to treat from experienced doctors. Shekarinai Sablushin Ashkenaz is called in German doctorate, I believe. Is that what that word is, right? You get a doctorate. I don't think they call that for medical doctors, right? It's not called a doctorate. But anyway, that used to be everybody got a doctorate, apparently. Vavo Pikain, Tzorch Shos Beis Din Yisrael Rabbis. But even though you have your doctorate, your degree, you still need to get permission from Beis Din Yisrael to treat. And he says, and if you don't have permission of Beis Din, even though you have a degree, you will be held responsible. Not only that, he says, if you have permission from Beis Din to treat, even though you haven't gotten a degree, shekain doctorate, you will be pater. We have that in our country. There are these doctors. They don't have any degree. They became experts because they read a couple of books on refuah, which today we would say they Googled it, right? And people call them experts. And being that the Sibra has accepted them, the part of Medina Adam. Okay, needless to say, no Bezin today would ever allow any doctor to treat without being a licensed physician, so it's kind of moot. But the Paiskim, the contemporary Paiskim, say that obviously today this is the standard that everybody has accepted. There's nobody would allow a quack to perform any procedure on them if they are not licensed and they haven't they don't have a degree and they're not a doctor. And the contrary also is that Beis Din or Tzibur, we accept anybody that is a doctor that has gone through the whatever is necessary for him to get that license. He then is given the reshus of the Tzibur to treat. So basically, therefore, what it boils down to then is that you should all be non-liable halachically, right? Mm-hmm. Halachically speaking, you should be non-liable, and this is very relevant. I'll tell you a couple of shalos where cases are relevant. The case I just read today is a shocking case. The case was that someone from a couple, they had a baby, and the baby was born with something wrong, neurologically wrong, right? So the baby, serious issues, neurological issues. And for 6 years, they were going from treatment to treatment, and they spent a fortune of money trying to treat this child. And they had a lot of financial and obviously emotional distress. After 6 years, the doctor, who was also from doctor, who was the doctor that delivered the baby, came on Erev Yom Kippur with a friend and said to them, he admitted to them that it was his fault, that it was something that he had done wrong during the delivery that caused these neurological issues. So now, they wanted to know like this. First of all, does this doctor have to pay them? Now, they were in Great Britain, so in England, it's all government medicine, right? So basically, what they really needed to do was they needed to sue him, and then the government would pay for all the medical costs that caused as a result of his malpractice. In order for that to work, the doctor had to testify in court to admit his guilt. So the shaila was, is the doctor obligated to do that? Is the doctor obligated halachically to do that because he owes them money? Because his malpractice caused them all his damage. So that was the case. That was the shaila. So they went, the Sefer goes through all these different, you know, issues. And then in the end, he quotes from some of the more contemporary Paiskim, Mendel Shafran, this a big dayan in Eretz Yisrael. He says that today, things work differently. There's a system. And doctors have malpractice insurance. And the given is that when you go to a doctor, the understanding, being that that's the legal, the way it works in the system, is that he has to treat you, and if he does something wrong, then he is liable, and he has to accept that liability, and you can sue him, and his insurance will cover it. And being that that's the way it works legally, so every person walks into a doctor profession with that assumption in mind, and therefore everybody agrees to that. Both the doctor agrees to have that liability, and the person will only get treatment, only agrees to get treatment because he has that protection, right, of the ability to hold the doctor accountable. So therefore he said all these rules of Bucky and I said they don't really apply because of that understanding of liability. But, he doesn't say this, but that only applies in an office setting. It won't apply on the street, right? Because there's no such understanding on the street, right? If you're going to, and there, if anything, the Good Samaritan laws protect you, and halakhically you won't be, by the same token, you won't be held responsible either. Because you have the doctorate, and you have the reshus beis din to treat as well, and you're mechuyev to treat. So halachically, if you treated someone outside the office, right, and then even if you realized you made a mistake, right, and you wouldn't be have any obligation, you'd have to be patur, at least between the other. What? Because that same, they say that nowadays that's the way it works. We accept any person that has gone through the system. That's how we do it these days. So yeah, we've given the tzibur has given those doctors the permission to treat. So anyway, but that's what he says. So just a fascinating thing. So if a doctor is aware that he did something wrong, even if the patient doesn't know, he halachically is obligated to go and to admit his mistake. Accept responsibility and either pay out of pocket or allow the patient to sue him and deal with all the repercussions of that. That's a very difficult pill to swallow. I mean, the fact that his doctor came after 6 years, obviously he was weighing down on him and he needed to admit it. But yeah, go ahead, Todd.
I mean, it's a thing. And normally, if you sue another Jew, you have to get permission from based on number one. And
right.
Does someone have to go through that process, or there's just general understanding?
So that's a great question. Essentially, that's what this person did, is he went to Beis Din. That was what happened. They were asking what they should do. I was actually just asked this question, not for a doctor, but for someone else. So same kind of question. It's a great question, but that needs its own shir. When that's true, when you have a problem with Rakayas or not. Yeah.
How far does the liability go? So he came back after 6 years. If he would have come back after one, there's still going to be future expenses.
Oh, you mean like how responsible are we going to hold him? I don't know. That's a great question, but I think there's numbers for those things, right? In other words, when you're awarded damages by a court, they have some way of making their numbers. I mean, usually they're huge anyway. They're like way beyond what a basin would give you anyway. So
if you had to come back after 1 year versus after 6 years, it would just be whatever the standard accepted.
Typically, ripoy. That's ripoy, right? So the damage of ripoy. Now, ripoy actually is not something we award as manazem. It's called grama. We don't really require you to pay. But again, it's different when you come into a practice with a certain understanding and a certain liability. So it's not exactly the same. So I don't know the answer to your question, how they would figure that out. But there's some way of doing it. The courts have some process for it as well. All right, we'll stop over here. Very good.